This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Josh, we got Maction tonight.
I didn't realize that.
We got Maction tonight, UB.
Oh.
That's my favorite thing in college sports is Maction. Where out of nowhere, just towards the end of the year, everyone decides Mac team's gonna play on Tuesday and Wednesday. Only the rest of the year. It's gonna be on ESPN, gonna be on CBS Sports, and you're gonna love it. It's so much fun. So much fun.
I just appreciate that it gets its own special day. Like everything else is like you have to just fight for airtime and hope somebody watches you. This is like, nope, we're going to give this to you.
Yep. And most college football fans are like, no, I love this. It's insanity. It's crazy. I mean, yesterday we had Ross Tucker call the game. He joined Shelton Bulldog yesterday. He was calling the game yesterday. Akron versus Kent State. Rivalry game, I guess, for the wagon wheel. Kent State
That's the best. Why don't pro teams do that? Like, yes, pro teams have their rivals.
Trophies.
Why don't you have pro teams have rivalry trophies like college football teams? That is so electric.
Oh, what rivalry is like the Paul Bunyan statue or something like that? Is it like it's like Minnesota and Michigan or something like that?
I think so. hang on,
it's
I'll
so
find
ridiculous.
It here. I know like Wyoming and Colorado State is the bronze boot.
The bronze boot, yep.
And then there's a trophy for like Hawaii, Wyoming, but I don't know what the trophy's called. It's a rainbow, something rainbow trophy. Rainbow Bridge? No. I don't know.
It's for the Michigan State rivalry with the Paul Bunyan trophy.
Yeah. Like, why?
Because why not? Okay, let's figure this out right now, real quick. If the Bills, Bills Dolphins, what's the trophy?
A fake dolphin's fin. That's it.
We got to think about this because there's got to be like some kind of historical significance here because Paul Bunyan is like the character is from Michigan.
So that's, I'm learning that today.
I'm assuming that anyway, right? Because if it's a Michigan State rivalry, right?
Yeah.
Paul Bunyan. From. The origins of Paul Bunyan are not fully known, but several states claimed his birthplace.
Including Minnesota, Wisconsin, Maine, Nova Scotia, Canada, and then Michigan.
Okay, so I guess Michigan has the biggest claim to fame because they have a trophy named after him.
I think they've just decided.
Yeah. But and then like you just brought up this wagon wheel thing. Like, okay, what's that about? You know, like there's got to be some sort of story, I feel like. So
Kent State and Akron are like 10 miles away from each other. That's really the big thing. They're just next door.
Maybe it's like a thing that dates back to, I don't know, there used to be like a wagon trail.
Really, for the Bills and the Jets, the winner actually gets to claim being from New York.
Yes. And then you can't decide it again until you do it. Well, that's kind of difficult because there's a two-game series. So actually, no, you just, if you win and then you lose later in the season, Well, it looks like you don't have it till next year.
If the Bills lose, you're actually from Canada. If the Jets lose, you're actually from New Jersey. Yeah. It makes more sense for them because their stadium's actually there, but the amount of jokes I've had from people that are not from Buffalo of like, so how close are you to the Canadian border? And you're like, oh, well, for me, like 10 minutes. And I'm like, oh, so you're Canadian. And I'm like, well, no, not really, but
not
sure.
At all.
You know what? Let's move on from this conversation. I am. You know what? Yeah.
Okay, well, what about?
I also have milk in a bag, yes.
But it's just like, that's the thing is you have to like look at, you know, Bills Dolphins or like Bills Patriots too.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, that is the hard part is you have to have some sort of historical significance.
College rivalries are better. I mean, partially why there's the huge bragging rights and everything like that.
And they've also, it feels like they mean so much more because it's not like in the NFL. Well, at least now it's a little different with the college football playoff being expanded.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day, it was if you lose one game, you're out. And if it's a game against your
biggest rival
team that you play all the time, eventually they're going to become a rival. And it's, you know, so that does make sense why they mean more. But at the same time, like the division rivalries in the NFL, there are some that
crazy. There are some that are just like, okay, you play in the division, cool, whatever. But like,
right, like think about like what's a division rivalry? Like
Bears Packers just happened. Like that.
That's
one's
a
serious.
Rivalry.
Yeah, that one's
right.
Real.
But like
another one that just happened: Baltimore Pittsburgh,
Cardinals Rams.
Yeah, I feel like there's nothing there.
Partially because the Rams not just got to L.A., but they haven't been there all that long in terms of how long the Cardinals have been in Arizona. Again,
49ers Seahawks for a while. I don't know.
I don't know if it's still there, but for a long time,
that one was awesome.
That one's probably there. All of the NFC East is kind of there.
Oh, they hate each other so much.
They all hate each other,
good.
But they're all bad, so it's never good.
So good. They hate each other so much.
Like think of the AFC South. Nobody in the AFC South hates each other.
AFC South, it's the Thursday night special.
Right.
And yeah, they're all kind of just there. Indy always has felt like off being in there because they were originally part of the AFC East,
which
made way more sense.
You might have something with like Jacksonville, Tennessee. NFC South is the same way. Like
no.
No?
New Orleans, Atlanta.
Oh, they hate each other. I was looking at that
one's fun.
I was looking at Carolina specifically because Carolina is just meh.
Yeah. Carolina and Tampa both feel a little off there. New Orleans, Atlanta, though, just from seeing on social media, they hate each other.
Until he got traded, Marshawn Lattimore and Mike Evans,
just specifically hated those
each other.
Two,
just specifically those two. Not the Saints and the Bucks, but the two players that just hated each other, and now one of them's gone, so you can only ever see it again in a Super Bowl or a weird in-season matchup.
Yeah, the weird in-season matchup that you're all like, oh, remember that rival? Yeah,
yeah,
all right, cool,
yeah,
we get this tonight. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like rivalries, especially we're getting close now. I think we've got one more week until rivalry week in college football with, of course, Michigan-Ohio State, Texas A&M and Texas for the first time in
over a decade,
the Lone Star Showdown.
Oh, so you're kind of battling just over the state.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense, though. I mean, you're in the same state.
They're like the two biggest universities, arguably.
Right.
That makes sense.
That
one I'm not really excited for. I don't like being a part of rivalry games as a fan. I might be weird in that sense. I remember watching, and this was a few years ago, but I used to watch these things called Derby Days. It was a YouTube channel, or it was a YouTube series by, I think, Copa 90, and it was just this host. He went to different rivalry games in soccer, and you got to kind of see that whole thing. And I remember one.
Man United, Man City is probably.
They never did one on that. Man United and Liverpool was the one I think they did.
Okay.
But for this particular episode, and it's stuck with me because I was like, that's how I feel. That is exactly how I feel. It was Arsenal and Tottenham.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Tottenham fan that was like, I wish I could just like fast forward to the 90 minutes and it be done. Or someone scores 1-0 and they just end the game. Like just in the first minute, score 1-0 and end the game. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Like I don't love being a part of the rivalry games, like for like that sense. The NFL, it's not that. For college, it is for me. We've talked about it off air. I don't enjoy the Oklahoma game. I don't enjoy the Red River at all. Mm-hmm. I just want it over with. I'm constantly stressed, even when Oklahoma or Texas is bad, and that the rivalry doesn't have that sort of mystique of it's 1 versus 2 or the top 10 matchup. I'm sort of now there with A&M again, and it's been a long time. Like I'm excited for the matchup, but I'm also like, ooh, I'd rather Texas go into the SEC championship with one loss instead of kind of what Lane Kiffin was talking about with the SEC, where it's like I'd rather not go in with two losses and potentially getting a third and being out entirely instead of having the bye. It's That's going to be an uncomfortable conversation, I think, for a lot of ADs and coaches of like, actually, yeah, we don't want to be in our conference championship game. Yeah. We want to be as far away from that as possible. Get our 10 wins, 2 losses in a big conference, and just shut it down until the playoff game, which that's a tough sell. But as a Texas fan, you know, first year in the SEC, I'd love to win the SEC championship, but you got to beat
A&M
first.
Here's a great rivalry name
actually,
for
Kentucky,
you.
Actually, Kentucky, too.
Mississippi State, Ole Miss.
Oh, the Egg Bowl.
The battle for the golden egg.
Yeah.
That is so good.
College rivalries are superior.
I just love the randomness of these things. Like, and obviously you get like the great ones like Army Navy. Like that's you know.
Iconic. Yep.
It's iconic. And I love that Michigan, Ohio State is just the game.
The game. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love looking at these because they're so much fun to like delve into the history and the lore and everything like that. And it's like, sure, you get that. Like, obviously, Bills Dolphins is like, you know, there was a whole thing in the 70s, and then, oh, the Bills break the drought finally and beat the Dolphins, and then it was kind of back and forth a little bit.
That's become a rivalry I truly enjoy.
Yeah, it's back now because
I'm not nervous.
You had the Marino Kelly days, and then you had both teams sucked for a long time.
Terrible.
And now they're both, I don't think the Dolphins are better, but they're not as bad as they were.
They might be able to sneak into the playoffs, though.
They might. And that's kind of, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that.
Like, I mean, since Tua's come back, I was listening to Colin Cowherd. Like, since Tua's come back, like, they're number one in third down efficiency at, like, 62%. And this is all since Tua came back. They're scoring, like, 28 points per game. Like they look much better. And then the Rams win was big. They've got somewhat of a soft schedule that they can sort of take advantage of. And then if you're kind of banking on, like, do you think Bo Nix right. in the seventh seed is going to be able to kind of like keep this going for Denver, or do you think Tua and Mike McDaniel can kind of, you know, make a late run here?
Yeah, because I don't think there's
usually pick the vet.
I don't really think there's a way Miami could get over Baltimore or LA. Chargers being there is kind of really messing up other wild card teams. I mean,
yeah, we didn't get to talk about the AFC much yesterday. We were just talking more Bills, Chiefs, and the Bills as a whole. But like the AFC has been kind of interesting this year in the sense of I think there's like maybe two elite teams, maybe.
And the rest
of the
teams.
But then everyone else is really annoying.
Right. The rest of the teams are good, but they're not like, I'm going to go out there and beat you with no problem good. They're just like, hey, we're going to figure it out in the last second and win the game. Because when you look down past Bills Chiefs, you have the Steelers, who are obviously, well, they're the Steelers. They're always going to just have a winning season.
I think they're 5-0, though, against teams with above 500 record.
Really? Okay. That's interesting.
They just keep winning.
And if they win tomorrow, they play Thursday Night Football tomorrow night, right?
Yep, against Cleveland.
Yeah, if they win tomorrow night, they will officially secure their streak of keeping 500 seasons, above 500 seasons, I should say. So there you go, Mike Tomlin. Good job.
He's conservative to the point where I'd hate being a fan of his. Like, if I was a Steelers fan, I would be frustrated by Tomlin.
He doesn't play to win. He doesn't play to have fun. He plays to have fun. He plays to just annoy you and make you watch boring football for 3 hours.
But they win. They win. And they win. It is so frustrating.
Yeah. And then you look below them, you have the Texans who... they've been kind of a letdown this year, haven't they? I mean, partially because of injuries,
but I also, you know, the shine on Bobby Slowick has kind of worn off a little bit. I remember the Texans week seeing a lot of their fans like really not fans of Bobby Slowick, and I'm like, man, 3 months ago,
right?
That was Bobby PFF, and he was going to be a head coach in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, Texans fans, and I, you know, of course, part of me smiling about it because I'm like, I kind of remember. The Dable years were very up and down. Like, he's going to be a head coach.
The growing pains.
Yeah. Well, not even that, but it was like, he's going to be a head coach in 15 minutes, too. I kind of want him run out of town like like a witch.
Yeah.
And it's not – it's always up and down. I feel like the only coordinator that is like – two coordinators that are just universally – the fans love them. Spagnuolo for the Chiefs with DC and Ben Johnson, offense coordinator for the Detroit Lions. I think after that, like it depends on the week. You'll get somebody that goes, see, I've been saying it for months. Like the coordinators are always first, then the players.
Yeah, right. It's interesting to see like the Texans season because, like I said, there are a lot of injuries there. But at the same time, CJ Stroud doesn't look like he did last year. And I don't understand why.
He didn't look great against Dallas, which was frustrating.
Yeah. I don't understand why, because he has technically more weapons than he did last year. He has Nico Collins back. He has Tank Dell, for what that's worth. I mean, he's been a little banged up here and there. And then who was the other one? the third wide receiver, not Diggs, but last year they had the three wide. It was Collins for a little bit. Then Tank Dell.
Stephon Diggs.
No.
It wasn't even John Metchie. Who was their third wide receiver last year?
He like popped off last year, and he's doing nothing this year. Let me look at their roster here, because it's going to bother me. Because there is one more guy.
Well, I mean,
maybe he's not there anymore.
Their biggest issues have been injuries. But you know what, though? And credit to a lot of Bills fans I know who I've talked to about it. Oh, Robert Woods? Is that what you're thinking of?
No. It was – hold on. I'll find it. Continue your point.
But on the Texans, having spoken with a lot of fans this offseason, it was always like, well, I mean, like they were 10-7 last year. Like, let's not act like they blew teams away. They had a very soft schedule because of how bad they were previously. Mm-hmm. C.J. Stroud, a lot of turnover-worthy plays. Take that stat for what, you know, as you are. But he had, like, basically no picks. He's already thrown more picks than he did at all last year. And then in the playoffs, they kind of fell apart. They beat Joe Flacco, and then the Ravens ran through them. I mean, just straight up killed them. So, yeah, the Stephon Diggs addition looked cool on paper, but maybe it wasn't really a sign of, yeah, here they come. They're going to take everything over. They might end up with the same record they had last year, which was 10-7? 10-7, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 7-4 now. They're saving grace, though, as their division is a train wreck. Anthony Richardson looked really nice last week, but outside of that, I mean, you're looking at Jacksonville's going to completely start over. Tennessee's probably also going to completely start over. Well, not head coach. I mean, this is his first season, but new quarterback in a bad quarterback draft class. So, I mean, I've said it before. I'd love to have another shot at Houston just because the fact that Allen, before that last drive, was, what, 9-27, and there was a chance the Bills could just win it there is quite eye-opening. how not great they are. The Bills, with their current wide receiver core, I think could absolutely take them, and I think quite handedly.
Looking back, I have no idea who I was thinking about, because I'm looking at this roster and there's Tank Dell and Nico Collins, but after that it's like Robert Woods, mm-hmm. Noah Brown. Maybe I was thinking of Noah Brown, but I remember.
Might be Noah Brown.
It might have been, but I just remember somebody stepped up when there were injuries last year. Maybe it was John Metchie too, but
I don't think it was Metchie because I think this is his first year. I think it was Noah Brown.
Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking of them the way I was, because I was like, you know, I just remember last year them, even though they were getting injured, they were still winning games and playing well. But like
CJ Stroud still looked amazing,
right? But like you were just saying, they played a bad schedule, and mm-hmm. sure, you play the schedule you're given, but at the same time, I think it showed us that it's not necessarily a great indicator of what's to come. Because yes, CJ Stroud has looked fine this year, but he's not looked like he did last year.
It was totally Noah Brown.
Okay, that makes sense.
Week 8, 6 targets, 6 catches, 153 yards, a touchdown.
Yeah.
The next week, week 9, 8 targets, 7 catches, 172 yards, no touchdowns. And then a little bit later on in the year, week 14, 11 targets, 8 catches, 82 yards, and a touchdown.
Why. It's because I picked him up in fantasy. That's why it was. Because I was like, there he is. This is a guy. I'll go get him. He'll be my post-trade deadline addition.
And yep.
Yeah. That's right. That's what I remember.
By the way, for the Texans too, Tennessee at home at Jacksonville, their bye week, so they're gonna be 9-4, most likely.
Yeah.
But then they get Miami at Kansas City, Baltimore at Tennessee. And that's where it's like, okay, maybe they could wind up a game better than last year.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Houston went from a team that scared me to not really.
Yeah. What was the record again last year?
10-7.
10-7. And man, I don't know. I think they could be better than 10-7. I think they could be a few games better than 10-7, because Tennessee and Jacksonville, sure, whatever. Like those are just pushovers, honestly, at this point. Maybe not so much Tennessee, but Jacksonville has problems. It's just not going right in Jacksonville. Obviously, Miami, it's yet to be seen, but Kansas City and Baltimore, that's gonna be a test. So you know, we'll see, I guess. But I think they could be 2 wins better, maybe 3.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. I mean, we haven't really seen the fallout of what's going to happen with this Kansas City loss to the Bills. I don't think it's going to affect them in the next couple weeks, but I do wonder if it's going to make them stumble at all, because we've seen that before with undefeated teams, specifically the Steelers from a few years ago
mm-hmm.
and the Eagles from last year. I mean, the Eagles lost one game and then went on a massive skid after taking the Bills to overtime. And the Steelers from a few years ago, it was, oh, wow, look how good the Steelers are. And then they just fell apart and blew up in the playoffs. That was the last year Ben Roethlisberger.
The 2020 Steelers. They ultimately go 12-4. They then lose to the Browns in the wild card game.
But I remember them being undefeated, and it was like, oh yeah, the Steelers are here. But it was they were not playing good opponents.
Well, it wasn't not that they were just not playing good opponents. They weren't doing anything convincingly. It was very similar to
what the Chiefs have been doing.
I also want to say the 2022 Minnesota Vikings. Yep, the 2022 Minnesota Vikings.
Oh,
13-4. There, they do beat the Bills in Buffalo.
That crazy Justin Jefferson catch.
And then Daniel Jones beats them in the playoffs.
Oh my God, that's right.
In the wild card round.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And that's what gave Daniel Jones his big contract.
And that's what gave Brian Daboll the job security and everything. Which, not to say Brian Daboll shouldn't have job security, but, you know.
Well, I mean, that was his first year, and after that it was like, okay, like.
This is the keys are yours. Yeah, go do it.
He's the dude. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Man, looking back on that, they really should not have given Daniel Jones that contract.
No.
Because
even that, too, was like Saquon Barkley was going off. Jones was playing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back, though, at this 2022 Vikings team, again, 13-4, they beat Buffalo in overtime. It's a lot of one-score games. Indianapolis in overtime. I think they also had Josh Dobbs like a few times. Was that Josh Dobbs' year? No, that was last year. Detroit's a one-score game. New Orleans is a one-score game. Washington's a one-score game. And then their losses, Philadelphia, 24-7. Dallas, 40-3. Detroit, 34-23. And Green Bay, 41-17. So, I mean, when they lost, you knew it. Didn't they have
the worst point differential out of a winning team?
Yeah, I think they had a negative point differential going into the playoffs at 13-4. And then, of course, they lose into the playoffs. So that'll be something I'm going to try to keep an eye on, or just maybe push a little bit, is, you know, these two teams were comparing the Chiefs to from recent years, both lost in the wild card round.
Who would the Chiefs? Oh, obviously they have the bye.
They would have the bye at the moment.
However, if they just get to the two seed, they'd play Denver.
They would play Denver currently, yes.
How would you feel?
I mean, honestly, a lot like what I said yesterday. I would take that match if I was the Chiefs 10 times out of 10, 100 times out of 100.
Okay.
Give me a rookie quarterback
on the road. They did just almost beat the Chiefs 2 weeks ago.
Sure, but give me the rookie quarterback
on the road in his first playoff start. I guess this also depends on how well the Broncos perform in a few weeks against the Chiefs in Arrowhead. Or no, that wasn't. This past game wasn't Arrowhead. Mm-hmm. Never mind. I'm trying to like pick out a team in that wild card round that I would want the Chiefs to have to face in the second round if they don't give up the bye. And I keep saying the Chargers and the Broncos, and I don't want them to play the Ravens because
I don't want the Chargers at all.
I want the Chargers to beat the Chiefs because I think the Bills can beat the Chargers. If it gets to that point.
I think so.
And this is way into the bracket, right? This is digging way down the road.
Yeah.
But I look at the Broncos, I don't think they could beat the Chiefs, but I wouldn't mind them being up against them in a potential matchup in the second round, if that is what the scenario is.
I would love Steelers-Ravens, though, round one.
Steelers-Ravens round one would be fantastic.
Oh, that would be so good.
But I don't want the Ravens to play the Chiefs because the Ravens always fall apart against the Chiefs. They never do anything right, and they just don't help you. Just get out of here. Don't do anything. Play the Bills and lose. Just go home. Like that's where I'm at with the Ravens.
Texans-Chargers, though.
That would be fun.
That'd be a really fun like first matchup in the
because
wild card
the Chargers,
round. Chargers are sort of this ascending team. They kind of have given off the Texans vibe. Where, like no one really had huge expectations in Harbaugh's first year, but now all of a sudden it's like oh well no here they are, mm-hmm. And then of course they're also coming off of a win that for years you just knew the Chargers were going to lose it because they did. They finally don't Charger things, and they beat Cincinnati. It's sure Cincinnati has kind of their own demons they got to battle through, but they finally get that done. The Chargers kind of just hey, like there's something about them I don't really love. I'm coming back now to what I was a few years ago when Herbert was first ascending in the league, where I'm like I don't want to play that guy.
It's almost like that.
I'd like to avoid him.
It's almost like a new coach bump has like been existing this entire season. Like you know how like when you just keep
they finally have a good like, coach.
You finally get a good coach, but it's almost like.
It's not Brandon Staley.
Yeah, it's not Brandon Staley. It's not someone that's just going to fall apart against the Jaguars at the last second in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're going to be very good for years to come. And I said it yesterday, too. Like, you know, long-term view, I really like what the AFC West is looking like in terms of Can someone finally take down the Chiefs? Can someone finally put them in a bad spot? Yeah, give them a run. Sal's brought up too, like yesterday with Shelton Bulldog, like you winning yesterday forced the Chiefs to play ball. That they have to now try to go win the one seed. And they have to keep competing the whole thing. They don't have to. They can't just put it on cruise control. Again, I don't really think they cared about the undefeated season. I think if it got to a point last 2 weeks of the year, we're locked in the one seed, you'd see guys being pulled at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Reid is still a guy that likes playing his players in the preseason, but you'd see guys. Okay, we're. Now the real season begins. We're polling guys.
A question for you. So have you seen all the discourse online about like Chiefs fans going after Bills fans and Bills players for celebrating this win?
Yeah, I think it's coping.
I'll say
that for any because fan base. I'm crazy. So tired of the opposing fan loses and goes, well, that's all right. You know, that was their Super Bowl. We'll get them later.
Yeah, like it's crazy how much.
I see it though in every sport. Every sport.
Mm-hmm. I know, but it's just I see it with. This one post, it's like, you know, there's no way they celebrate in their locker room like this after the game. And then there's pictures someone else posts of the Chiefs the week before beating the Broncos of Mahomes running around the field like a crazy person.
Yeah, kind of doing the same thing.
Players screaming and yelling in the locker room. And it's like,
I think it's coping.
Who cares?
I'd also tell you,
they're celebrating a win.
I'd also tell you most Chiefs fans kind of know their team is not that good this year.
Yeah.
In terms of what they have been previously.
Mm-hmm.
But you were 9-0.
Right.
So there was always this kind of protective shell of like, but we keep winning.
Right. It's the kind of the don't say the quiet part out loud sort of thing of like let's just not shed light on this until we absolutely have to. But now it's getting to the point where I think that the Chiefs will have to shed light on, hey, the point differential's terrible. We've barely beaten bad teams. We have a couple blowout wins, sure, but just lost to the Bills. Like That's a hard conversation to have because it is, on paper, such a good season. But at the same time, on paper, it's a bad season. And well, on the field,
and
it's a bad
season. And they're trying to do something that's never been done. Win three in a row in the Super Bowl era.
That's a lot more pressure than going undefeated.
Yeah, and they're currently seeing, you know, this season, it's just, again, another year where it's just the offense doesn't look right. Mahomes doesn't look like Patrick Mahomes right now. Mm-hmm. He didn't against the Bills, and he hasn't all year.
Last year, he looked like Patrick Mahomes, but the offense just wasn't right, which mm-hmm. That you could just kind of put down to new personnel, players getting older. But now it's gone on to, sure, you have injuries, but at the same time, now Mahomes isn't playing the way he normally does. So it's another problem in your offense. The main problem last year was just you had players getting old and you had players not performing the way they should.
Yeah.
But now it's that plus him not playing the way he should, which has never been seen.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, I'm not trying to, you know, make him sound like he's a perfect player, but at the same time, this guy threw 50 touchdowns one year.
Well, and also early in his career, it did feel like at a certain point, it's like, okay, he's like the greatest all time already.
Yeah.
Or like he's well on that track, just how good the playoff numbers were, his first season starting, mm-hmm. 50 touchdowns, and yeah, all of it.
And
so
this season,
for him, just having a solid season
feels
like a, what's going on?
Right, I was going to say, because this season doesn't take any of that away.
No.
He's still the best player in the NFL right now. In terms of career,
mm-hmm.
in terms of this season, I don't think he's the best player even close. I really don't.
Who is the best player in football?
Right now, this season?
Yeah, because I usually almost never give it to a quarterback. Because I don't usually think the best player in football.
Saquon Barkley.
I was thinking about him.
Yeah, Barkley's
I was thinking about him.
I was going to say Justin Jefferson, but he's been kind of quiet. Not quiet, but.
I want to think about this. 803-0550, the number to call. Best player in football? Love to get your thoughts on that. Also, we were talking rivalries earlier on here in the hour. Coming up at 11 o'clock, very excited for this conversation. Aaron Quinn of Cover One will join the show. We'll also have Sal Capaccio at 11:30. And, oh, we cannot forget Sabres After Dark tonight. They are in L.A. taking on the Kings. 10:30, puck drop. 9:30 pregame will start here on WGR. We'll also talk a little bit about that as well. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We'll be right back.
Has time. Now locates Barkley out of the backfield. Barkley slips two tackles and picks up the first down. Jumping up in the air to the 30. A gain of 14 for Barkley with some nifty moves along the way.
Saquon Barkley. It's so much fun watching him be good at football again. Not just good at football, but like healthy and having fun. Man, he's such a talent. That's the reverse hurdle highlight as well. Oh. Josh, what were your first thoughts with that? Because, like, my immediate
hurdle?
Yeah, my immediate thought was, yeah, why, how, is that the best play I've ever seen? Maybe not, no.
I don't know.
But when you start having those immediate thoughts, you're like,
Think about how we felt with the first Allen hurdle. It was this, whoa, no quarterback has ever really done that before. Yeah, I was jumping up and down like
I was at a bar crazy. With my dad and my uncle, and the entire place was like, oh,
yeah. Well, that was the collective feeling of the entire NFL when Saquon Barkley did that.
I will tell you though too, it was still so early; none of us really knew Allen all that much. Except
right.
it's like the third or fourth game of the year,
mm-hmm.
and immediately everyone was like, "Never do that again. He's gonna die."
Yeah,
like,
and then he's done it six times since.
He's done it a lot since. I still have the same response.
Somebody always makes an edit. Takes the original photo of him hurdling over the guy in Minnesota and just keeps adding players to it for whoever he hurdles. Mm-hmm. Like L'Jarius Sneed's on there. Who else is on there? There's a bunch of guys at this point. There was a guy on the Patriots at some point.
But I have the same reaction, I think, every time that Allen does it. Like, it's immediate euphoric. I'm like, this is so cool. Like this is my guy's thing.
Yeah.
And then immediately after that thought finishes in my head, the next one is... He is going to get hurt at some point.
Well, there was
that.
The one against Arizona this year. The one against Arizona this year. And I remember celebrating, and then my dad goes, oh, he's on the ground. And I'm like, huh? I was not looking at the TV. I turn around, and I'm like, what?
Yeah,
like, and then he gets up, and he's holding his hand, and I'm like, oh, no. Oh, it's his left hand. Never mind. We're good.
The world absolutely stops. It is brutal.
Yeah.
Put up a tweet going into the break here. Best non-quarterback in the NFL, especially with what the NFL is. Usually you say the best player, and you'll get a lot of quarterback answers. I kind of want to differentiate it, mainly because for me, when I think of the best player in the NFL, it never is a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It often is an edge rusher, defensive tackle, running back, wide receiver, what have you. Like for years, for me, without thought, Aaron Donald was the best player in football. Mm-hmm. For most of his career, he was.
Yeah.
I'll also say during the late 90s, early 2000s, Randy Moss. I thought was the best player in football.
Now, are we treating this as best player on the team, which is technically MVP? Because if you think about an MVP award, which we can also get into this conversation of, like, should MVP be the best overall player, or should MVP be the player that is most valuable to their team, regardless of how good or bad the team is?
It's tough where we're at with MVPs, especially in a sport like football, because it really has just become a quarterback award. Because even when I'm saying best player, these guys won't have, like, if they're out of the lineup,
mm-hmm.
Very rarely will the point differentials change.
Yeah.
It'll change a little bit, especially with some of these great players. It changes a lot when a quarterback is out. It changes a ton. And that's where, honestly, the most valuable player is always going to be a quarterback, and it should always be a quarterback
but
in
I'm
the modern
saying,
NFL.
In this conversation, we could also kind of branch this out to the MVP of non-quarterbacks, because, again, it's for players that are good on their team and make their team good.
And that's where you get offensive and defensive player of the year.
Right, but that's also where you can get into, hey, this team is bad, but this player is really good. And that's where I'm looking at this list of, you know, different players in different categories here, and Chuba Hubbard pops up on the list for me.
Oh, my God, why? Love Chuba Hubbard, but no.
I'm not saying he's the best player in the league, but he's probably the most valuable player on Carolina because he's the only thing in their offense. He has 818 rushing yards in an offense that is inept.
He is like the guy.
He's the only guy there. He's fantasy relevant on a team that is abysmal. I'm not saying he's the best player in the league, but
I'm glad he finally got going.
Right. But if we're
last
looking
year a little bit, now this year definitely.
If we're looking at a player that makes their team good on a potentially a bad team or whatever, good team or bad, he makes them good in terms of having an offensive output of anything, because they have nothing Bryce Young is at quarterback.
I mean, he's good. He's solid, but like, he's not going to be like on this list for me of guys. Like,
no, I just wanted to bring that up because I saw his name here, and I think he needs more recognition because of just how bad of a situation he's in.
Also doesn't help. He's a running back.
Right. Right, which
running back on a bad team usually signifies, oh, you're getting touches because your quarterbacks are terrible.
Yeah, but he's getting touches and he's being good.
Yeah, he's very good. He had
like, it's not
almost
like,
160 yards rushing this past weekend.
Right, it's not like he's getting touches and he's only getting like 50 yards a game.
Yeah. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Just having a little fun with who is the best non-quarterback in the NFL. Windmill tweets in TJ Watt. Mm-hmm. Adam also tweeted in TJ Watt. Lenny, Derrick Henry with Chase is a close second. I think Derrick Henry has a good argument for the last few years because he's been kind of like the one guy kind of holding against the running backs are worthless sort of conversation, because he's like, well, now wait a second.
Is he gonna win Offensive Player of the Year?
No. I think Joe and Jeremy were having this conversation. I think it's right. Allen wins MVP. Lamar gets Offensive Player of the Year. Lamar is putting up a special season.
He is.
It's frustrating, though, especially if you're a Ravens fan, knowing that he shouldn't have won last year. He wins this year. And I'm saying he won't win. And I think that is sort of like intervention by the voters of, all right, we maybe pushed the envelope a little bit too much last year. He should have two MVPs. He should not have three.
Yeah.
He got one a year he shouldn't have, and he misses out on one that he should have.
Should Allen have won it last year?
Allen should have won it last year. Yeah. Either him or Dak Prescott.
Ooh, I forgot. Yeah, he had a good year.
Dak Prescott had an amazing year with what we're now seeing is a true tire fire of an organization. and he's doing that with, like, it was him and CeeDee Lamb.
Okay, I don't know if you know this, but if you had to guess, who leads the NFL in sacks right now?
Ooh, who leads the NFL in sacks right now?
Yeah, this is this year. This is kind of surprising to me.
Okay, so it's not
my first thought would be Pittsburgh, but I feel like
the player. Sorry.
Since you said surprising, it's not Myles Garrett. It's not TJ Watt.
Nope. There's a bunch of ties actually. So I was gonna say they're not even on the list in top 10, but
it's not Micah Parsons.
Nope.
AFC or NFC?
AFC.
I got nothing. Who is it?
Trey Hendrickson.
Trey Hendrickson really does lead the league in sacks.
Yeah, 11 and a half.
Yeah. The Cincinnati
and
Bengals.
Wants out of Cincinnati.
Yeah, the Bengals literally are Burrow, Chase, Hendrickson, and then just a lot of not good. They are very top-heavy roster. Mm-hmm. They are a very top-heavy
roster.
And by
top-heavy, you mean three players.
Yes.
Because there's nobody else. Because like sometimes top-heavy can mean like, you know, you have like three good guys or like three amazing guys or one amazing guy and then like a next tier of like they're good, but they're not.
They feel like they fall off quickly.
Right. And then you have everyone else. But the Bengals literally have three great players and nothing else. I can't even put T. Higgins in like a good category anymore because he's just so inconsistent. He can't stay healthy.
See, I think he's good. It's just
he's good, but he just can't.
He's not going to change a roster.
No, right. He's like what Deontay Johnson was kind of supposed to be in Baltimore, but they haven't used him at all.
Don't even get me started on that. don't even get me started on that. Ian tweets in Ja'Marr Chase.
That's a hard conversation to have, but it
he has developed into a true like all around wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Because in his rookie year, it kind of felt more big plays, not huge volume. Yes, but not the guy that's going to warrant 150 targets.
He leads the NFL in receiving touchdowns. Oh, right behind him though, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he has a case.
I do love Amon-Ra St. Brown.
I think he has a case just because of how consistent he is. I mean, obviously we know the king of consistency in Khalil Shakir, but Amon-Ra St. Brown was kind of the forerunner in that, right? I mean, he was the guy that you'd pass him the ball and he would get something done. Whereas Khalil Shakir has kind of picked that up. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown is still very consistent and very good, but Shakir has kind of taken the spotlight because of the lack of drops and the lack of, you know, he has a 0% drop rate.
Man, I am looking at Ja'Marr Chase, though. So his rookie year comes in with Burrow, 128 targets, 81 catches, just over 1450, 13 touchdowns. Sticks around that target number, but also sticks around that receptions number too. So success rate's a little over 55%. This year, though, 100 targets, 73 catches, just over 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. I mean, he is a really, really special player.
He's the
player.
Only player in the league above 1,000 yards right now.
Yeah, he's a special player.
Next closest is Justin Jefferson.
He, to me, is just – it started last year, and it's continued in this year. He has developed into that all-around wide receiver. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't matter where you get him the ball. Just get him the ball.
As much as I've been frustrated with the Bengals and, you know, the recent seasons against the Bills, it's such a shame that their owner just won't spend money. Like, if he could – if they could actually, you know, go out and build a team. Burrow, Chase, like, having that –
that core is special.
Having that duo is something NFL teams dream of. Not only are you getting two great players, but they were great together in college. It wasn't like they were both in college at the same time and great. They were on the same team. Like, you knew what you were getting when you drafted both of them. Like, you can't not build around that. And that's kind of what they're doing. They're not really building around it. And it's frustrating to see. Like I said, like it's hard to have that conversation because I don't want the Bengals to be really good. Because
I'll allow it.
What do you mean?
I'll allow it. Don't spend money.
Oh, right. No,
the Bengals freaked me out for years. I'm good.
Yeah, don't interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, as a fan of the game and a fan of teams getting better, it's really frustrating.
Yeah. Another fun thought here. Steve tweets in, if he played on a better team, I believe Max Crosby would get my vote.
Ooh.
He is one of the elite pass rushers in the NFL, and he does kind of keep the Raiders defense, I mean, just even in games at all.
And he spells his name with two X's, which is infinitely cool.
That's electric.
And his nickname is Mad Max or Condor, because he's a vulture.
No, see, Condor's amazing.
Yeah.
That's like Khabib Nurmagomedov, the former UFC fighter.
Yeah.
His nickname was The Eagle.
Yeah.
That's cool.
When you're named after a giant bird of prey, like that's,
Condor.
You know you've made it.
My goodness.
His stats look...
Last three seasons have been really good. 2022, 12.5 sacks. Last year, 14.5 sacks, along with leading the league, I believe, in tackles for loss at 22 and 23, respectively. He's at 11 right now, and then sacks 6.5.
Yeah. He still has time to make up those numbers, because he could definitely get to 14.5 again, I think.
I don't know if he's necessarily on that pace.
No, but there's time. He's good enough of a player to kind of make up that ground.
Oh, my goodness, too. 36 QB hits in 22, 31 in 23.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if he was on a better team, who would you put him on to make him better?
Buffalo Bills.
Well, right. Yes, obviously. But I feel like a lot of these like great defensive players that we see them as great because they're the only one on their team. Right? Like, look at TJ Watt. He's the best defensive player on his team. Look at Myles Garrett.
Well, I mean, he's the best defensive player on his team, but it's an overall good unit. He's just the pinnacle.
Yeah. I look at like the edge rushers specifically, and it's like, yeah, sure, if you have a good defensive line, it really helps out a lot. But great edge rushers like Max Crosby, TJ Watt, and I'm not saying the Steelers have a bad defensive line, but the Raiders don't have a great defensive line, and Max Crosby still gets home. So I think it's funny because it's, you know, we started the conversation about how like you can't, like, are you judging these people on what's around them or on what they're actually doing for their team? And I feel like you have to kind of go back and forth in certain areas on those things, right? Like, you have to look at, you know, are they making their team great, or is everyone around them allowing them to be great?
I think it's a mix of both. I think great players just are great. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing. Like, Aaron Donald for a long time kind of, like, that was the argument too. Like, he was the defense for
But
the
there
Rams.
Were players on that Rams team, or on those Rams teams with Donald, that looked better than they were because of Aaron Donald.
Oh, yeah.
Like, then they went away, or Donald got hurt and those players disappeared.
That's where you're getting, like, you know, TJ Watt has done that for a long time. I think Cam Chancellor did that for a long time with Seattle of being kind of Richard Sherman was sort of the face. I thought Cam Chancellor, though, was like the easily best safety in the league for a long time with Seattle. And great players are going to do that. That's why we talk a lot about quarterbacks, because they make good teams great. They make great teams historically great at times. It is Wash and Fold Wednesday. Bills are on the bye week, but as it currently sits right now, Bills in the 2 seed, the Broncos in the 7 seed. The teams have only, though, met one time in the playoffs. Of course, it being in January, it was a different year. So our trivia question of the day is, what season did the Bills meet the Broncos last and only time in the playoffs? First caller with the correct answer over at 716-221-4WGR. That's 716-221-4947. Wins a $100 gift card to Top Shelf Wash and Fold Laundromat. Drop off your laundry dirty and pick it up clean and packaged for you. Complete laundry services from a coin laundromat. Top Shelf Laundromat, because we all deserve the best. 3 locations, Depew, Williamsville, and Tonawanda. Coming up in just over 10 minutes, Aaron Quinn, Cover One, will join the show. Talk more on the Bills. This is WGR. And we have a winner, Johnny in West Seneca. The correct answer, the 1991 Bills season. Ultimately, though, the 1992 playoffs. The Bills did beat the Denver Broncos in the AFC Championship 10-7. Ultimately, though, would lose to Washington in the Super Bowl 37-24. Mark Rippon.
You don't say.
Mark Rippon. Speaking of that, his nephew, Brett Rippon, used to play at Boise State. Boise State yesterday.
Look at you. Whoa. Timeout.
Got the 4 seed in the projected college football bracket that released yesterday.
You'd be number one in the college football bracket if it was for segues. That was insane.
Thank you. Boise State, the number 4 seed, all because they were ranked higher than BYU. So BYU would, yes, get into the college football playoff if they were to win the Big 12 championship. They would obviously be one of them. But because the selection committee did have Boise State as ranked higher, they're at 12, BYU is at 14, they would give Boise State the bye. That's not going to last, mm-hmm. but I found it really funny.
No, and Ashton Gentry, I think is his name, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he is.
Amazing.
He's a freak.
He's amazing.
He's incredible. I can't wait for the Cowboys to draft him and then ruin him.
They're not going to ruin him. He's going to be awesome there.
No. It's just. Okay, fine. He's going to be awesome really for the first couple years, and then he's going to hate his life and want to leave.
Probably.
And then he's going to get ruined.
Boise State, though, just has two more games at Wyoming this Saturday and then Friday against Oregon State. This is going to be Black Friday against Oregon State.
20 minutes ago from Ohio State, their starting center has torn his Achilles.
Oof.
Yikes.
Oof.
That is not great for Ohio State.
Nope. And for Ohio State, all they have left is number 5, Indiana. This Saturday at noon, very excited for that game. It is a top 5 matchup. And then, of course, the game against Michigan. And then, you know, for all those that care, mainly me, Texas has Kentucky at home.
You're getting me onto the Texas.
I've gotten my entire family onto Texas.
I'm
a grizzled vet in getting people to like the Texas Longhorns. Grizzled vet here, man. My brother grew up an Alabama fan. He now wants to go to a Longhorns game. It's what I do. 803-0550, the number call. Talking a lot of the best player in the NFL that is a non-quarterback, had some fun answers. We'll get, though, more on the Bills. It's coming up after a quick timeout. Aaron Quinn of Cover One joins the program. You're listening to WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Back to pass, play action. Allen has to throw it out in the right flat to Shakir. He's at the 50. Gets away from a tackler. 45-40. 35-30. And rumbles his way down to the 27-yard line. There's the yards after catch.
Chris Brown on the call there. Khalil Shakir, definitely one of the main ascending members of this Bills team. 45 targets last year. He's already at 56 receptions this year. One of the best yak guys in the NFL. One of the best catching percentages in the NFL. I have been on him since Boise State. Josh, I know you were a big fan of his as well. And another big fan of his, joining us now on the West Her Hotline, Aaron Quinn of Cover One. Aaron, my man, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good morning. It's a little chilly here, but doing all right other than that. How you guys doing?
I mean, the weather thing, too. I have been living in bliss with it never getting under 40, like, during the day recently.
Crazy.
Like, it's been beautiful. I'm like, yes, keep this going. I know global warming's a thing, but, like, selfishly keep this going. And now, finally, winter is coming, and I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, it's been a nice short-term benefit to us up here. And golfers, I know there's a lot of golfers over there at WGR. The season has been extended longer than I thought possible, so not too many complaints.
Personally, I'm very happy that it's starting to get colder. I'm a big winter guy. You sleep better, you feel better, you can wear the big puffy clothes, the vest, the flannels. It's just, it's my type of season. I cannot wait.
I can't do the snow. I can't do it. The driving in the snow and everything.
We can agree to disagree.
But Aaron, we're bringing you on here because the Bills are on the bye week, and man, like they have. To me personally, we were talking a lot about it yesterday too. Have exceeded what I thought my expectations were going to be this year. I always think the Bills can win the Super Bowl with Josh Allen, but they talked about it being a year in transition, and yet here we are at the bye week, half game out of the one seed, 9-2. What have your takeaways been so far?
A couple of things, really. I think if you line it up also with sort of the media perception of the Jets and Miami Dolphins this summer, I think we kind of go about these things in the wrong way and how we define what we think success will be or strength of schedule or predictions early on before football is even played. I am also probably, I'd have to say, if I look back at my predictions, the Bills have impressed me. They've probably exceeded where I thought they would be. But I didn't think the drop-off was going to be as significant. There's a lot of names and recognizable names, and I think there's a lot of emotion attached to those names. But just because national media guys don't know the names coming up, right? Like nobody was talking about Christian Benford. There was a little bit of rumblings. You mentioned Khalil Shakir. Guys weren't talking about some of the things that we, as people that cover the team all the time, knew was kind of in the back burner and why the Bills felt okay releasing and letting go of some of the names, the aging names. And that is what good teams do. And we should have seen this coming when you have a QB like a Josh Allen. We saw it with the Kansas City Chiefs just a year ago. That was also supposed to be a retooling, rebuilding year, and they ended up winning the Super Bowl. When you have a good foundation, you have a good culture, you have good front office, coach, and you got the quarterback, a lot of that stuff, it erases a lot of the perception of, all right, we can move on from a Jordan Poyer and we're going to be okay. It doesn't matter as much as it used to.
And I do want to get to Shakir, but as you just brought up there, talking about some of the defensive guys that left as well, this Bills defense, I mean, kudos to Bobby Babich and McDermott, but yeah, I mean, you're seeing Dorian Williams taking a step forward. You've mentioned Christian Benford. The safeties, we've taken a lot of calls here, both on this show and across the station, about, you know, come the trade deadline, add safeties or do that, but Damar Hamlin, Taylor Rapp, I thought have been very, very good back there. And then you're getting a lot from Greg Rousseau, who, you know, the sack number's not up there, but the pressure rates, it looks like, have been up there, the QB hits, what have you. They have just built a system, a culture, an organization that just can elevate these young guys when the time is for them to get into the starting lineup.
Yeah, and actually, John Butler was on with Tim Graham after he was no longer employed with the Bills. And one of the things that stood out to me that he did talk about that was a positive was really knowing the defense and finding the guys that are just going to fit, whether it's culture or just schematically, right? And I think Damar Hamlin is a great example of that. He's taken a lot of heat this year. I get accused on Twitter because I defend that it's not as bad as it feels. Are there probably five or six plays he wants back that are big ones and stand out? And I'm sure the post-game show gets calls of people yelling at him? Yes, definitely. But he's better, I think, than people assume, and he's a fit. He went to Pitt, which basically is a farm system for this Sean McDermott defense, so he had years invested in learning this type of defense. And so as he comes into year four, he's already ahead of the game and being a system fit and knowing where he's supposed to be. Is he the most athletic guy? No. Is he making the biggest splash plays in the league? No. But he's pretty much always where he's supposed to be. There's a couple run fit issues, but that's everywhere around the league. And so he's one example. Christian Benford is another one. No one was talking about him in the draft process. And Butler kind of talked about guys like him and Dane Jackson specifically as there's a certain type of DNA you need to play in this defense, and the Bills are really honed in on what kind of guys they need, and you're seeing that kind of play out. And it's depth guys like a Casey Tuhill, another kind of under-the-radar signing, and every time he's in, he's making, again, not big splash plays, but he's doing exactly what he's supposed to. But then you have it on the high end, too. I think somebody that's not getting enough credit, and there was a lot of off-the-field issues with him last year and then obviously facing the suspension this year, but coming off an injury, the big contract, a lot of kind of negative vibes going towards Von Miller, and he's actually playing really well, and I think he's going to be big down the stretch as well. And so they're getting it out of the guys that are the high ends, your Greg Rousseau, your higher draft picks, but also it's the depth and knowing what you need in those positions. Another guy, Ed Oliver, you know, had an injury earlier this year, but over the last 3 weeks, seeing him build more and more and being that disruptive presence, they just find right fits, and they're able to let guys go. We saw it a couple years ago, Tremaine Edmonds, another player who we defended a lot as he's a really good player, and we were worried about his departure. But then Terrell Bernard steps in and makes you not even worry that you lost a good player. And so they continue to just draft and develop, and that's a really, you know, there's a lot of flaws with Sean McDermott that people want to talk about, but being able to, with him and Bean in lockstep, drafting and developing, look at what's going on with the Jets right now. They've drafted well on the high end, top end, but their depth's not there. When injuries happen, it's not there. The culture's not there. They've done a great job of doing it, and I think you see it on the field with the defense.
Another guy in the defense that I've loved so far this season is Terrell Bernard. Obviously, he hasn't played every game here yet, but, you know, it just it feels like he's out there and can completely control that defense. And there's one highlight from the Bills Chiefs game this past weekend where, you know, you see him tap at Oliver to get over and cover that QB sneak or potential for a QB sneak. And that the awareness there is just insane for me. I mean, his season so far has been fantastic.
He's been fantastic. Eric Turner, I got to give a shout out to him. He saw this coming from a mile away of just what type of player he is. He's always got that iPad in his hands when he's seeing with pictures. Like, this guy's a student of the game. And here's the thing. The separation of talent across the NFL, it's not huge, right? Like, there's talent on every roster. So it's the extra stuff. It's the small stuff. and Bernard's doing it. You heard Sean McDermott talk about it this week. It's just all the attention to detail, the preparation. And he had that on one of the touchdowns. It was a slant in the red zone. You can see him signaling to Taron Johnson. I love Taron Johnson. I'm not trying to get on him, but Taron, it was a miscommunication. You could see the passion. Like, Bernard saw the play coming. He knew what it was going to be. He communicated it right, and somebody didn't pick that up, and it resulted in a touchdown. But that's happening. I watch defensive all 22 every single week, and he is the guy. You're right. He almost sees every play coming before it's there, and that's just attention to the details, to the preparation, and it speaks volumes of, again, the type of DNA guys there. Again, nobody was on Terrell Bernard when he was drafted, and people were kind of like, you know, what are you doing? You have Tremaine Edmonds. You have Matt Milano. We need offensive linemen. Why are you drafting this guy? Same with Dorian Williams. You know, he's not at the level Bernard is, but people were like, you just drafted Terrell Bernard. What are you doing? They have a vision for what they want this roster to be, and it's paying dividends.
Yeah, I remember doing those draft shows, Aaron, and both those picks came in, and you're like, okay. And the positive side, what you were thinking is like, maybe one of them will be the Tremaine Edmonds replacement. I mean, that was how you took it, and now looking at both of them, they've got two incredibly good young linebackers on this football team, and maybe getting Matt Milano back here relatively soon, exciting there for the linebacking core. On the offense, though, Aaron, Khalil Shakir, I thought, him and Kincaid, I was very, very excited for most of the offseason. I like the addition of Curtis Samuel. I kind of understood the vision of Everyone Eats. But for me, in the summer, in August, I thought it was going to be, that'll be fine because Shakir and Kincaid are going to be kind of their number ones, their dual number ones. They haven't gotten Kincaid going. We'll talk about him here in a second. But Shakir, I feel like he's a top 20 wide receiver in football, not just slot receiver. He just feels like he does everything well.
Yeah, I've loved it, what he has shown since before last year when he really came on. You saw it coming. You saw the trend going in the right way. It took a while to replace that production that Cole Beasley left this offense with, right? That security blanket role in the slot, which is so important to Josh Allen in this offense. It took a little bit of time to figure that out. And Shakir has like blown that ceiling wide open. That's no disrespect to Cole Beasley, really one of the better slots of the last decade, but what Shakir offers is so much more. He can do those things. He can find the soft spots and zones. He's an intelligent player. He's so reliable at the catch point, but he's shifty, obviously. People see the yards after catch ability, which is something everyone has wanted in this Bills offense for years. Make it a little easier on Josh. We don't need explosives to all come from air yards. You need to be able to get guys the ball, make them miss guys in space. But the most important thing in his development this year, I think, is Brady and his development. One of my biggest issues with Dorsey was not being able to manufacture touches for your playmakers in space and get them the ball. We didn't really see that, right? It was within the flow of the offense and option routes and Josh having to make those reads and find guys. There was a game a couple of weeks ago where they went at Shakir like five times in a row on these little screens and dump off plays. And he just made plays happen. And getting your playmakers the ball in space is huge. And I think that's been the real leap in Shakir kind of getting on the national stage is Brady's ability to say, hey, if he's not getting the ball in within the structure of the offense, he's such a playmaker. We got to find those ways to get him the ball. And he's dialing some of that other stuff up for, we saw some of these like swing passes that go to Cook, but it's really like a lead swing pass. They haven't really hit. KC really wrapped them up really good this week. Those are going to break at some point. You're seeing more and more of that. And I even think Kincaid is getting some of those looks. Unfortunately, Josh Allen is kind of missing him on some of those ones, which make the Kincaid stats feel a little worse than they probably ought to look. But hats off to Brady for being able to dial up specific looks for specific players to try to get them the ball.
Yeah, and on Kincaid, you just mentioned it there too. I mean, we were talking last week. Joe Marino, I think, jumped in as well. For me, I definitely phrased it poorly on Twitter because I try to write it out in the proper character limit. But for me, I don't think it's him. But yeah, is there a chemistry issue with him and Allen? Because then, I mean, you see against the Chiefs game, I know Allen's not the greatest deep ball passer, but he puts a rainbow ball on Amari Cooper, where with Kincaid, it just hasn't really gotten going yet. They don't really seem to want to use the tight ends a ton, which is fair. That's fine. But for him being a first-round pick, maybe selfishly for me, I did sort of expect a lot more. Not what Brock Bowers is doing or even to be Travis Kelce. But, I mean, Sam Laporta last year, not really this year. They're finally getting him going. But, walk me through it a little bit here.
The way I'm viewing it is, one, I think a lot of defensive coordinators saw the vision that we as Bills fans saw going in the year, right? Like, this guy's a weapon. We have to keep attention on him. That takes away some of what the Bills probably want to do, but that opens things up for other people. I think that the threat, whether or not he's productive or not, the threat of that production exists when teams are game planning. Some of it's just luck. Mm-hmm. Right, some of those shots it's not on Josh, it's not on Dahl. I mean, it is on Josh if he misses, but those are not high efficiency plays. The one that he got hurt on, that's a deep shot.
Yeah.
Those don't hit at a high efficiency. We had that kind of conversation with Josh early in his career. I think they're going to come. I think you still go to them, you still work at those. There's been moments of production. We saw even this weekend some of the, like, a screen to Knox. I think if Kincaid gets that, there's probably 5-6 extra yards on top of that, and so it's going to come. And for me, as soon as a guy's in the building, I remove the draft pick. I know it's hard for people to do. Mm-hmm. There is an expectation that comes with the draft pick. But for me, it becomes, okay, now I've got about a 3-year development window. Can this guy hit those kind of expectations within a 3-year development window? You're seeing it with Greg Rousseau, right? Like, he didn't hit that window right away. There was some concerns that, hey, is this going to be another one of Brandon Bean's busts? Ed Oliver was the same way. We do see guys come into the league right away and have immediate success and hit that draft, expectation. But more often than not, those are the anomalies, and the averages are still a development of a 2-3 year window. And I know Sean McDermott's talked about that before, that, you know, we got to take the pressure off some of these guys and allow them to develop as players. I see development in Kincaid's game. There's still more meat on the bone for him. I'm excited about the future, and I think as he gets back here healthy, when you get a stable of, now we're seeing Curtis Samuel healthy, defenses are having to target in on Khalil Shakir more. Keon Coleman's development has been really good. It stinks to see him get hurt. But if you can get, I don't know if we'll get all these guys healthy back at the same time, it's going to open up a lot of things for a lot of players. And I think Kincaid will eat because of that development of everyone else.
So you brought up Curtis Samuel a little bit there, and he by far had his best game as a Bill this past week against Kansas City. Do you think it's been injury? Do you think it's been trying to get involved in the offense? Like, what is there more to come with him, you think, or where are we going there?
I don't know if there is more to come, but I was definitely an advocate of kind of pumping the brakes on the frustration with him early in the season. He was suffering a turf toe injury this summer, right? And that's one of those injuries that's so annoying because it sounds like it's nothing, right? Turf toe is such a bad name for it, for actually how tough that can be for an athlete to overcome that injury and play through it. He was overcoming that, and then he got the pec injury on top of that. And so, again, Sean McDermott kind of talked about that. He's been very resilient in playing through injury to get here. And as other guys got injured, he was kind of forced into a spot. I know there was a lot of frustration of, like, hey, Brady didn't get him going. I think they tried. He just wasn't fully healthy, wasn't fully ready. And again, as other guys are stepping up and making plays, if he's your fifth receiver option, like, defensive coordinators can only throw so much attention at so many guys. And if the Bills get healthy, you've really got to pick your poison. And that's where I don't think on a consistent week-to-week basis, Curtis Samuel is going to be a big-time player. But there's going to be certain matchups where teams are bracketing Kincaid, or they're trying to stop the screen game with Shakir. And like, one of the plays Greg and I keep talking about is that screen. You've seen teams kind of step up into it and swat some of them away. I'm waiting for Brady to set up that screen and have Samuel just like leak out the edge and go come down the seam. And I think that's where he's going to expose some plays. He still has explosive playmaking speed. And so again, I don't think it'll be a week to week thing where we see a lot of success from him. But as wide receiver 5, what an option to have.
Yeah, it's weird now looking back just a month or so ago. I know Nate Geary tweeted out as well. Like, the wide receiver position is now like one of strength, where not that long ago it was a real concern. You're getting Curtis Samuel healthy. The Keon Coleman development as well. Aaron, you quickly mentioned that his development's been really good to see. It is a shame he got hurt. Yep. I was not the biggest Keon Coleman fan coming out of Florida State. I was much more of an Adonai Mitchell guy. Like, that's who I had zeroed in on for the Bills. But sure, I have been so impressed by Coleman as the weeks have gone on. Really, for me, his best game, maybe not stats-wise, the Seattle game. I thought he was a true, honest-to-God difference maker in that game.
Yeah, and again, I think it's culture fit, right? Like, mm-hmm. so many people, I know your guys' station was blowing up over the Worthy stuff, right? And
oh, I know.
Even one series into that Chiefs game was like, oh, God, look at what he can do. But I watched back that film, and Worthy's not there. He's not ready. His development's still not quite there. I mean, the Bills eliminated Kelsey from that game, and they eliminated a lot of the weapons, and they didn't go at Worthy, and I think that's because they don't trust in him entirely. And Keon Coleman's just a fit. And another guy who's not getting enough credit, we just talked about these receivers, Mac Hollins. People were really hard on Mac Hollins to start the year, and I think it was because he was thrust into a role that isn't really a fit, and once you've got Amari Cooper, he could kind of settle back into the role that is. I know, again, Twitter's not real life, but a lot of people have seen Valdez-Scantling doing well in New Orleans, and to me that's more a product of, hey, there's not a lot of depth there. There's injuries there. It's an opportunity thing. Again, I think the margins are slim in talent, so good on him for doing that. Mac Hollins is such a better all-around wide receiver and what he's able to bring to the Bills and the small details and things. So this is a well-rounded room, lots of different weapons, lots of different options. And again, it's buy-in from all these guys in development and getting the right culture fits. And I think that's what you're seeing starting to kind of take shape here as we get towards the end of the season.
So, Aaron, with the Bills on a bye week this week, what is your plan with viewing the NFL? Are you going to take it a little bit off, or are you going to look around at some of the bigger name teams in the AFC? What's the bye week have in store for you?
Bye week for me is honestly just sit back and enjoy football. I love every ounce of it. Right now, the way I'm looking at for the Bills specifically is they just got to handle their own business. The games that I've seen them lose, like the Ravens definitely gave it to them a little bit, but I feel like the Bills really lost that game more. And same with the Texans game, the Bills really beat themselves in that game. And so get healthy for the Bills. And I think that they can beat anybody. I'm not worried about, you know, other teams and what they're doing as much as sitting back and enjoying the NFL. And the Bills are in such good position that, yeah, there's probably a couple games that I'm going to cheer for certain outcomes so that maybe the Bills can clinch up the division a little bit sooner. But they've done everything they've needed to do to this point at the bye, where my only concern for the Bills is, hey, who are the guys that are going to get healthy here and come back for San Francisco and Detroit and in the LA game here over the next month? Other than that, I'm just sitting back and enjoying football.
Aaron, man, thank you so much for jumping on with us today. What do you guys got cooking over at Cover One?
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. Make sure you're following on YouTube, throughout social media. We got all the guys are working really hard to bring content for Greg and I this week. We were having Aaron Schatz, I know a friend of the station here, mm-hmm. on to talk about DVOA, one of my favorite stats, and how that impacts the Bills and what to look for and the predictive nature of that. And then Greg and I are going to kind of run through some of the remaining schedule and how playoff scenarios could shake out and seeding and stuff like that, which is so much better than years past in the drought of being around Thanksgiving time and starting to look at mock drafts. It's way cooler to sit and look at playoff scenarios versus mock drafts. So we're excited for that.
It really is. Growing up with the Bills drought, this was mock draft season. And I mean, that's kind of why I became a draft junkie. But yeah, I mean, even today, looking that the Bills could be playing the Broncos and envisioning that matchup, way, way more fun. Aaron, man, thanks so much. Enjoy the bye week. We'll talk again soon.
All right, appreciate you guys. Thanks.
That was Aaron Quinn on the Wester Hotline over at Cover One. Again, great follows, all of them. A lot of good film study, breaking everything down. I know I go to them a lot to get a better picture. We did it with Kincaid today. I mean, I was someone that was very much down on him, and Aaron kind of, you know, set me straight a little bit on all that stuff. But we've also both been big Khalil Shakir fans, really, since he came out of Boise State. I will say the one thing I did not get right on him is I thought he'd be like a baby Deebo Samuel. They used him in the run game enough to where I was like, now wait a second, that could be really, really fun and interesting. And it never ended up materializing yet. It has not materialized yet. I think it could still work. And as Aaron mentioned there too, the screen game and what they've got going there, there's going to be a game or two with both him, Kincaid, Samuel, that it could break. And I'm really liking where the Bills offense is at. My only issue, and they didn't really have it last week, but it has been an issue this season, has been the slow starts. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I'm worried about. But if they got that, maybe that full complement of wide receivers, or at least close, which they could hopefully be getting here in the next few weeks, that might be changing here coming up.
It's funny because, like, we brought up Shakir and stuff like that, and we were talking before the segment started, and obviously you and Derek are like the leading voices for the Shakir Hive and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was I don't know. It's funny. I'm always like the third forgotten member because I was quietly cheering on from home because you guys were here doing the draft coverage, and I'm just like, this is great.
Well, I was sitting where Evan is sitting now too, yeah. And they picked him, and my arms went up because like I think the month or so before the draft, I'd like kind of like dove into his film, and I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, I like him.
Yeah,
like this is good.
You were the reason why I got on board with it. It's just I don't know. I always think it's funny that it's like you and Derek leading the charge, and I'm just here as like a quiet cheerleader. You're like, hey, yeah,
woo. 803-0550 is the number to call. Going to take a quick timeout when we come back. Sal Capaccio joins the show as he gets ready to take his much-deserved little break here with the Bills on the bye. We'll get his thoughts on the Bills being 9-2, half game out of the AFC, and plenty more in the NFL after a quick timeout. You're listening to WGR.
Joe Douglas's contract was up after this season. I don't know that he wanted to stay there anyway, but the Jets made it simple on him today. And obviously, Woody Johnson fired him this morning, just as he fired Robert Saleh on a Tuesday morning last month. And so the Jets are starting from the ground up again.
There's Adam Schefter there on yesterday's firing of Joe Douglas. Happened about a half hour after we got off air. Not too surprising, as Schefter even pointed out there, like this last year of his contract. I also saw reports too. It's like he's been miserable. Why not do it now? They're going on the bye week. It is so fun though that this went as bad as it could for the Jets. Mm-hmm. I mean, like if you had to, what's the worst case scenario?
When Aaron Rodgers,
like realistic
Aaron
worst case
Rodgers
scenario,
first step into the building. Okay, what's the worst thing that could happen? It's this.
It is that by year two, everyone is fired. They're not even going to win six games.
How are you feeling if you're like Sauce Gardner or Garrett Wilson?
Oh, this sucks. This is awful.
Because like if you're Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson, like you're so young in your NFL careers. And all of this turmoil has just followed you for your whole time in the NFL.
Well, I mean, you kind of knew. You got drafted by the Jets. You had an uphill battle.
That's fair.
You did. But, I mean, just it's gone as bad as it could for the Jets. Mm. They've won one game since firing Robert Saleh.
Yeah. I mean, anti-head coach bump.
Oh, man. Yeah, not great. I think their defensive stats have also gone just down.
Yeah, everything has, on both sides of the ball, it's all gone down.
Bad vibes. Joining us now on the, I guess, kind of Western hotline, but not really. He's sitting right next to me.
Sitting in front of us.
It's the Duntire studio. It's in the Duntire studio, actually.
So how are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. How are you? What did something happen with Sauce Gardner? Or we just
the Jets? We listened to Adam Schefter kind of give the obituary to Joe Douglas. He was like, they go kind of new, but why not now?
Yeah, you know, he gets a lot of credit for drafting well, and I'm not going to take away some of the really nice draft picks he's had. They've had a lot of draft capital with some of the trades they made early on, and they were drafting high. It's also, it's more of a hit rate to draft high. You don't have to all the time. But I just think that they've just managed themselves into a really, really, you know, terrible position, obviously. And it looks like they're in for a hard reset that could take a little while.
It's going to take a little while, too. And I know this has become a conversation the last the last few days. It's a bad quarterback draft class, too. So, I mean, you've got an older quarterback that seemingly has bad vibes all around your team that already didn't have great vibes. And I mean, if you're not getting Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, even then...
There's no way Deion Sanders lets Shedeur Sanders go.
I don't think so.
He would see the Jets and just absolutely not.
Did either of you see that yesterday, Michael Urban on the Herd talking about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did. And I have a couple things to say about that. First of all, anybody thinks that Shedeur Sanders isn't like... I saw a lot of like, well, who's going to draft him that high? Oh, he's actually legit prospect, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But here's the thing. Like, so what Michael Urban said was, so people to catch up, Michael Urban said... He has very good sources, meaning obviously Deion, right?
Totally, I mean, Deion.
Yeah, he's very close to him. That said, that if that Shedeur Sanders, Deion's son, got drafted by the Cowboys, Deion would take that job because people have tied Deion to the Cowboys job because he's a former Cowboy, and it's Jerry Jones and glitz and glamour, and he's doing well in Colorado. But here's the part about this I don't get: Are you telling me that the Cowboys would literally wait until after the draft to hire a head coach? Because how do you know they're going to draft him? What? You can't do that. You can't hire a head coach in May.
You would have to have the first overall pick.
And know who you're taking.
You can do it. Yeah.
Exactly. You can't do it.
No.
So that doesn't wash with me. Like, he would have to take the job in January, and then they'd have to do whatever they can to move heck and high water to get Shedeur Sanders. Or they'd have to just think, let's hope we get him. Or they say, yeah, we'll wait. We'll hire you after. But then what's the point? Because then there's nobody else left to hire anyway. Yeah. Because everybody else is gone.
Yeah. And if there's so much chatter around like Deion actually pushing for his son to get drafted by certain teams, is that actually going to scare teams off? Or are they just going to be like, no, you're lying. That's not true. Like,
I do think that there's an element of, we've seen this with some people over the years. What's the gentleman in basketball with his kids that came up and he was always
The Ball family.
The Ball family, yeah.
Lonzo Ball, right? Yep. We saw this kind of thing. I'm not comparing Deion to Lonzo Ball. My point is we've seen parents get so involved where teams are like, I don't know if I want to deal with that at that level. And here's a football guy, he's a football coach, and he's going to draw a lot of attention. Like, I think about, I have no idea if the Bills would consider, like, obviously they don't need a quarterback, right? So let's just say it wouldn't be the Bills, but I think about a team like the Bills, like that's a kind of team that wouldn't want that necessarily hanging around their building and every day and all the talk and the distraction. Like, it's just everything they're not about.
Like a team that has that type of culture that just isn't, it's not this drama fest, essentially. Because that's kind of what all this is.
That's exactly what you bring with it, right? The same thing with, like, Deion said something like, I'll make sure Travis Hunter goes to the right spot. How are you going to make sure of that? Like,
I'm so into this, what this draft season could be. And it helps, too, that Colorado's been good this year.
Yeah, for sure.
A very real chance.
And Travis Hunter's amazing.
I think now he is the Heisman favorite.
Do you guys think he's going to pick one position? Or do you think he's going to try to do the dual position thing?
I've been so up to him on that.
Yeah, that's fair. You're right.
It does not matter what he wants to do.
That's true.
Once he gets to the NFL, they'll say, you're either a wide receiver or a DB, or we'll let you do both. That it's not up to him.
I just wonder if a team's going to let him do both.
I'll be very surprised if any team lets him do both. I think you want to get the most out of one.
I think a team would put him at spot duty on something or other.
Okay.
We've seen that before right? But in the NFL, you really have to train at, you know, one spot kind of. So it'd be interesting. But anyway, just going back to all that, I just don't think I think it's really interesting when Michael said that, and I'm thinking, well, how are you supposed to wait till the draft and then hire a coach? It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And even then, the marriage between Jerry and Deion would be the I mean, as an outside person, I'm here for it. That's a reality TV show.
Jerry loves Deion. They love each other. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I even think Jerry Jones wouldn't want Deion Sanders because Jerry's the face of the organization. You hire Deion, he's immediately the face of the organization.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry gives interviews after every single game.
Yeah.
Deion's also going to give interviews. With that being said, though, Deion in the cowboy hat with all the cowboy
really fit.
TV would love that.
Yeah.
But Sal, the Bills, 9-2 going into the bye.
Yep.
We were talking expectations yesterday. I thought they could win a Super Bowl in a transition year. Teams have done it. Kansas City's done it.
Yeah.
But it is kind of surprising that, like, this year, of all these years, this is sort of their best start. Not sort of. It is their best start in the Josh Allen era. It's
very best start. Best 11 games in 32 years, right? It's incredible. And I just think it's so wild to me how so many people thought in August, June, July, August, going into the season, that this team was resetting, rebuilding. And here they are with this type of record. Like, you have to give so much credit to this organization for being able to navigate that. It's not all about Josh Allen. He's playing great. I mean, he's not having an unbelievable record-breaking year. It's all about what they're doing as a team overall. Yes, of course, you don't have Josh Allen. This doesn't happen. But I just think your organization deserves a lot of credit. I think that they knew that it would be a transition year. They said that. And even probably in their own building, they'd wonder, what does it look like? But we're confident. We're confident. I remember in training camp, players like Deion Dawkins saying, like, yeah, everybody's kind of thinks that we're kind of taking this step back. We're going to surprise a lot of people. They don't realize how good we're going to be. And even I had my doubts, but thought they'll still compete. They'll be fine. Like, at this point, I figured if you can get to 7-4, that'd be a nice record. Like, that's a good record after 11 games for this team. And maybe you're competing for a division. To be 9-2 is just, it blows my mind that this team could be 9-2 after everything we've seen. And you look at the roster too. I think we could make an argument that it's not the most talented roster they've had in the Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean era.
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
But they're playing really, really, really good football, and they're playing together, and it speaks to the culture they built, speaks to identifying talent, the young talent that can come up and fill in. That's a big part of it, too. They're getting guys who are ready to step into roles who didn't have to before, and now they are, and they're ready for that.
I think it's kind of interesting, too, because the whole everybody eats mantra at the beginning of the season, it's not that it hasn't been there, but it's only been there in, like, certain weeks. Like, you haven't seen one main guy step through as like the main target or whatever, but you also have seen for a 2-week period Keon Coleman's going off for these two games or this game or whatever, and then look, it's Mac Hollins actually like stepping up, and here he is. And it's like, I thought Everybody Eats was going to be, you know, every game you have all of these different players doing so many different things.
Sure.
But in reality, it's been this week it's your turn, this week it's your turn. And it's just, it's worked. And it's a
good
point.
And I think that that's based on if a defense comes into a game and goes, well, listen, we need to shut down Khalil Shakir. Well, now suddenly maybe Keon Coleman has a breakout game, right? Boy, we need to shut down, you know, now Amari Cooper. Well, here's Dalton Kincaid. And of course, you know, he was injured last week. So I do think that that happens. Look, we all know Stephon Diggs is a great player, right? This is not to diminish that whatsoever. But I think everything we just talked about with the culture and building and like how you, what we just talked about with Deion and then mm-hmm. all that, when you have a presence like Stephon Diggs in your building and every day, it weighs on you, I think, as an organization to make sure that like that guy's getting his, right? It doesn't have to be him saying, I have to or I'm going to be a bad teammate. I'm not saying that. But I do think you think about it all the time. Like, we got this guy. We got to feed him. That's why he's here. We're paying him a lot of money. And I just think it really kind of freed up. Not having him, they're not as talented. There's no doubt. They're not as talented at wide receiver this year. But it's freed them up to be able to utilize everybody and not worry about who's getting the ball. And everybody does pull for everybody. And everybody eats in that sense. So it does work. Yeah, it's amazing, I think, how this transformation has kind of taken place when you look at the offense and all of that. And look, not having Dalton Kincaid last game, not having Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman and still able to move the ball the way they did. And it wasn't always great. It was a struggle at times. But to be able to score 30 points all these weeks that they have is pretty remarkable. I think it's amazing that here we are, and yet they still have reinforcements coming. They're getting healthy.
That's how I looked at it, yeah. That's how I
looked at it. Right? It's incredible to think that they can get maybe to an even better level, another level, after what they're doing based on these guys coming. And the team has played the long game, guys. They have said, like, maybe, I don't know this, but let's just say Dalton Kincaid was close. Let's just say Keon Coleman was close. Spencer Brown. What did they say? No, we don't need to do that. We're okay here. These guys can play, and you give them an extra week, and that's what's kind of been it's the reward that keeps giving.
And it also shows like the confidence they have in their backups, in those guys like Ryan Vandermark. I mean, that he stepped into his first NFL start and was shut down Chris Jones.
And I think he didn't shut down Chris Jones. Osiris Torrance did, because he's on the inside.
That's true.
Right? But he played really well. But you're right. I mean, on the right tackle, I guess you're right. When he's playing
that side.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's right. I'm sorry. But you're right. Because I want to make sure Osiris Torrance gets his props.
Always,
he had a great,
He was great.
He had a great game. It wasn't a one-on-one thing with Ryan Vandermark. Your point is right, though, about Ryan Vandermark. And this is what I like to say. How many people? There's a lot of Bills fans out there who could not tell you how or when they acquired Ryan Vandermark. There's people thinking, oh, they must say was in UDFA this year. Nope. He's been in the organization for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. They must have signed him after the draft. And what? Nope. He was actually in UDFA by the Indianapolis Colts. They waived him. The Bills then plucked him to their practice squad. This is what I mean. They identify this talent and say, this is a guy we think in a couple of years can be good for us. Let's develop him. Let's work him. And when you have a GM and a head coach on the same wavelength, I'll give you one that I think doesn't get talked about enough. Like, what a great move it was to trade for Brandon Codrington.
Oh, yeah. I love him so much.
Right? I mean,
he's been such a fun piece on this special team.
But I mean, like, think about how shaky the return game was in the preseason and all that.
Yeah.
It is completely stabilized. Like, there's no question. When this guy's getting the ball, A, you're thinking, oh, yeah, we're okay. Mm-hmm. You know, granted, he may have had the fumble. He's not going to make a mistake. He's going to make good decisions. Oh, by the way, he might take one to the house.
Yeah, they haven't had that since Andre Roberts.
Exactly right. And he's a rookie. He's young.
You could maybe have him just as a piece for the next few years.
I mean, you talked about the Jets earlier. I get the Jets have Gibson's their returner. He's really good.
Yeah.
But when they traded for Codrington, and I watched him the first couple of times I watched him, I thought, boy, the Jets might regret trading this kid in their division. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be really good.
It's a lot of fun.
Things like that matter.
Yeah, exactly. And we've talked about, like, the organization needs to get more credit than often they're given. I mean, McDermott maybe especially is always lambasted. You've brought up, too, the fourth down point. Out of nowhere, he's too conservative on fourth down. You're sitting there going like,
it's just
him and Dan Campbell and everybody else.
Yesterday, there was that tweet that Ben Baldwin had, Computer Cowboy, I think it was from him,
mm-hmm.
if I remember right, and I quote tweeted it and said, boy, even me, like, I'm surprised even how aggressive he's been.
Yeah.
He's been very aggressive, and anybody who says that he hasn't It's just what you say when you don't like the guy or because you because he coaches defense. It's just what you say. It's just wrong, right? But yet, sure enough, someone had a reply to me that said, well, he's really aggressive against the weaker teams, but not against, or but not against the better teams. Like, what information are you gathering
from? Where's this
that is
from?
Not true. He's just, he's been aggressive. Now, look, it doesn't mean he's perfect. He's not infallible. We know that. He had a bad challenge the other day, right? At the end of the Houston game, they screwed that up. But you want to put that on Sean? He's the head coach, of course. Him and Joe Brady. That has happened. We know it's happened in the past for sure. Every coach has these moments. Every coach has times where they screw up or, you know, don't play the clock right or challenges. But this coach here, for what he's done with this team, to be able to build, to be able to develop, and then now you put that with the piece of being more aggressive in those moments, in those situations, people want to see it in the playoffs. But I just think he deserves credit for it.
I'm seeing this chart for the first time, and wow.
It's incredible.
I didn't realize it was that big of a difference.
Him and Dan Campbell, everybody else.
Yeah. And it's also interesting to see the Chiefs all the way back at the end. Like, that's, wow.
Now, someone said, yeah, but if you look at that chart, someone said, but what you really want is to be high up on the right side, like the top right, because that shows you're really aggressive in all situations. I said, that's a good point if you say what you want. You don't have to necessarily want it. To me, that chart's showing he's been smart aggressive.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? It's not reckless aggressive. It's smart aggressive.
Did you hear him on with Shope and the Bulldog?
I did. It was amazing.
He gave a long answer on all the fourth downs.
Yes, it was great.
It was.
Credit to Mike for asking him to walk through the process. Yes.
And it was great. I will say this, and Sal, you're around him much more, but from the outside in, it does feel like this year, him and the team, a little more relaxed. It has felt like the last few years they've been wound up tight. And this year, I mean, McDermott's making jokes with the media I hear constantly, even in the post game. He's making jokes with Mike and Chris. And I'm like, maybe there is this feeling of, okay, it didn't happen in the first era, if you will, with Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen, and that group. But we like this group, and maybe there is a little bit of pressure off them.
Sure, I do. I think so. I think there's something to be said for that, and they can play a little more free. So, and Josh, you know, it's so funny. He's still kind of maintaining. Remember last year was like the 2 years ago, whatever it was, low positive. It was just like he never seemed like he was ever happy.
It's the worst verb.
Now
ever,
today,
always.
I mean, now you watch him this week, last week, in these games. He's shown a lot of emotion in the game. But after the game, he's very calm, collected, talks about, hey, it's one game at a time, 1 week at a time. I think he's just, he's much more mature at that level as well. But he's not just being low positive because he's emotional in games. Right? But I do think that there's a bigger picture at play here that we're trying to accomplish, and they're not going to be satisfied till they get that.
All right, Sal, we do got to hit a break, but before we do that, what do you got planned for the bye week here?
I am heading out today. We are traveling out and flying out to San Francisco tomorrow morning.
I want you to know I'm immensely jealous.
I've known about this trip for a few weeks. I texted Pat Hammer. Really a lot of rain happening this weekend, unfortunately, in that area. Today, like, they're calling like a bomb cyclone or something, a weather event. I'm like, what is this?
What?
I'm going
what
out there. I know, right? Something like that. A lot of weather. Anyway, we're not going to let that deter us because hopefully the weather dries up a little bit. But Alcatraz Friday night.
There you go.
Night tour. Sabres Sharks on Saturday in San Jose. That's going to be fun. If you're out, we're going to try. I'll be putting stuff on my social media at Sal Sports. Going to try and meet up with some Bills backers after the Shark Sabres game because it's actually going to end at like 8 o'clock their time. So we'll have some time. So in San Jose, if you're in San Jose, San Francisco area, I'm trying to hook up with some of the backers there. We're going to go someplace. I'll tell everybody where it's going to be. We'll do that. Then hitting up Napa on Sunday and tasting some wine.
Beautiful, man. Have a great time.
Thanks, guys. We'll be back next week, and you guys do a great job, and I appreciate you always every day here 10 to 12. I know that this time slot's important for people, and obviously I know you'll be filling in on Monday while I'm gone, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, man. Got to take a quick time out here. Still, of course, always taking your calls, 803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live also coming up at the top of the hour. This is WGR. Quick final segment here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, which, of course, is always brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Josh, Sabres play tonight. Sabres after dark.
I have a theory of how I can stay up and watch this game.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to get home at like 12:30. I'm going to go right to sleep, right? I'm going to go sleep until 10:30 tonight, and I'm going to stay up, watch the Sabres game, and just stay up till work.
That actually might work for
you. I think it would work.
You are going to hate yourself.
No, because the game would end at 1. I'd have like 3 hours, 3.5 hours till I'd have to leave for work. I could just, you know, read a book, play some video games. Maybe even take a nap.
Fall asleep again.
Just take a nap for 3.5 hours. I think I'm going to do it.
Sabres at Kings tonight, 10:30 puck drop, 9:30 pregame right here on WGR. And for more on the Sabres, stay tuned. Sabres Live coming up next after a quick timeout. This is WGR.